Presley! It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall. It's episode 77, visiting with Greg Godfrey in the second and third block. He is the man behind Godfrey Entertainment, which you go, huh? I'm not sure what that is.
What do they do?
They do the Nitro Circus films.
Oh, and
he
yeah.
is such a cool guy. So make sure you stick around for the second and third block. It's me, Richie T, joined by brother Kyle and Lindsay. They're here, and we're going to do this little intro for you.
Yeah.
So, and I love the Nitro Circus.
Do you?
My kid and I both love him. Yeah.
What's your favorite thing you've seen him do?
Travis Pastrana did backflip over two big buildings down in Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Like nothing below, you know, like 10 stories up, backflips over. Barely makes it. Awesome.
These guys are nuts. And we talked to this guy about some of his crazy stunts.
And
it's nuts.
And his broken bones
yeah.
and his hospital trips.
And his poor wife who has to just sit by him and support him. Oh, drive me nuts.
So make sure you stick around for the second and third block. You know, what's new? What do we got? What do you got new? Anything?
No.
Getting ready for the...
Spent my day, and I'm still not done. I have to, by the end of today... finish my online driver's education course.
Okay.
To keep my license.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why? Was that?
Because I've had so many tickets, and this one even more put me over the edge to where they were going to take it away. And so they said, if you beg the prosecutor, maybe we'll let you take the course, even though you've taken it twice in the past 2 years already.
Mm-hmm.
So they had me take a new course, and I'm doing it online.
Nice.
Like going to college.
So it's not like driver's ed. It's like defensive driving.
Yes, but it's not even called defensive driving. It's something.
Are your tickets for? Speeding?
A few are, but
that nature.
No, all kinds of things, because I have a plate on the back of my car that seems to attract policemen who then want to yell at me and tell me I'm not allowed to use it.
What does your plate say?
It's a dealer plate
okay.
that I can throw on any car.
Mm-hmm.
I've been pulled over and ticketed because it was in the back window and it was crooked. It was at an angle. I've had a ticket for that.
That puts points on your record?
Yeah, moving violation.
Sorry, but what does a dealer plate mean? That just is like a dealership?
It means there's
like...
drugs in the trunk of his car.
Yes.
You'd think that they wouldn't be so obvious about it, but
right.
it's like, yeah, I'll put it on my license
yeah.
plate.
It's for car dealers are then allowed to take that plate. We don't have to ever pay taxes or licensing on a car. We can drive whatever we want if we stick it on.
Oh, I see.
Now, you have to be part of the dealership as ownership to do it, but they always pull me over and say, you think you can do whatever you want with that? And I say, yep, I can.
So are you part of a dealership?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I can do whatever I want with it. No,
like
I didn't steal it.
I
know. I was like, well, maybe that's not the most honest thing to do, but...
Here comes Judgy McJudgerson again.
Judgy McJudgerson over here is here.
And he wears sweatpants when he drives, too.
If you wear sweatpants where you drive, you're classless.
What's even more classless, the last ticket that I got was I accidentally got on the freeway here in Salt Lake on 5th South. Or 4th South. It's an HOV only.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been on that one. And so I hopped on. I'm in a convertible red Corvette.
Yeah,
that
which is probably
it.
What
yep.
had more
which
to do
which is classy.
With it.
And so I pull, all of a sudden I realize I'm hosed. I'm stuck in this lane. And so I immediately pull out of it, you know,
but
over
you
the double,
the
white,
double
line.
White line.
Yeah, so
yeah.
I got, oh, he threw the book at me.
See, I use that lane all the time. Judge me. But the HOV, the 4th South exit downtown in Salt Lake City, it's a secret exit that you can get off and avoid all the 6th South traffic.
I know. But I wasn't supposed to.
Yeah. But probably they say red cars, right, attract police
mm-hmm.
more so than any other color. Maybe I just made that up. But bright and flashy cars, obviously, are going
yeah.
to attract the popo.
I felt like a tool driving the car to begin with, if you want me to be honest. I don't like to drive it, that one. It's gone now. I don't drive it. But
Sold it?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah.
That's high fives across the table. That's
I got pulled over, too, this weekend.
No high fives.
Did you?
For speeding. Okay, I'm in Midway, Utah. Has mm-hmm. anyone been to Midway recently?
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's up by Heber City.
Small little town. Yeah. Don't know the speed limit. I'm looking for this place.
What were you doing in Midway?
I had a live broadcast for one of my radio stations.
Nice.
I was doing a
5K. Where in Midway?
At the Wasatch State Park.
Oh, sure. We're
yeah.
at Soldier Hollow.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So we did the Vigor 5K. If any of you are looking for events to do, vigorutah.com. Shameless plug. I loved it.
Cold.
So on my way, yeah, and running through the snow and obstacle coursing it at the same time. So kind of crazy. But on my way there, looking for this place, following these MapQuest directions and obviously not paying attention to speed limits, going 45 in a 30. But like, come on, Midway, it's like 9 in the morning on a Saturday morning. Like, what else do you got to do? Like, why
it's
you got
to
give
me a lot of businesses.
Ticket?
They need your money.
I
Let
know.
Me tell you what that online page said about that. Is that worth killing somebody to risk?
Oh, come on.
It's what it says.
That's what it says in that thing. I've taken that course, too. I've been
close to losing. But there's like four people that live in Midway. I'm not going to kill one of them.
If you hear that, Midway, she hates you, too.
It was only going to save you 7 seconds, and you're putting people at Midway at risk of dying.
I didn't know what the speed limit was.
I didn't know there were people in Midway.
In my defense, I thought there was only horses and cows. No, I just didn't know what the speed limit was, and I wasn't thinking about it, frankly.
You didn't plan. You failed to plan. People don't plan to fail. They fail to plan.
I wasn't thinking about what the speed limit was because I was trying to get to my destination. And it was like a windy dirt road.
Let me tell you about farmers for a second.
Do you like farmers?
I'm a huge fan of farmers.
Yeah.
Farmers are what built this country.
Are they?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a Dodge diesel pickup, I know where you can get three of them right now.
This is interesting. We got an email in from a guy by the name of Brant. Says, hey.
Hey.
That's how it starts out. He sent this email by, I think he probably sent it by richie@theculturalhall.com. Says, I saw Brother Kyle's post on Facebook when he first posted, and he almost left a message. This is talking about, this goes back a couple weeks to that you were taking your kid and the people don't, and the ward don't know you.
Yeah.
He says, I had a very similar situation occur to me as a divorced father years ago. After listening to you talk about it on the latest podcast, I thought I would share this. Brant goes on. I was married in 1987. We had two beautiful kids, a girl and a boy, and by 92, we were divorced. With my ex-wife taking the house, I lived in an apartment complex 30 minutes away, and it really didn't make sense to attend my home ward, which I never attended, and add the extra drive time on Sunday. Drive 30 minutes, pick up kids, drive 30 minutes back to church, attend church, drive kids home 30 minutes, drive myself back home for 30 minutes, not economical. My ex-wife no longer went to church, and with my kids being young and living in a great ward, I would pick them up and take them to church every week in the only ward that they ever knew. I thought they would enjoy it more if they went to church with their friends, and my ex-wife didn't care, and I really enjoyed the ward, so it just made sense, and it really was a great ward. Anyway, this went on for a couple years, and one day, a very nice sister who had never really spoken to me came and sat next to me on the pew before sacrament meeting and asked me how my wife was doing, and that she hadn't seen her in church for a while.
Oh, I've had that one.
Awkward.
Yeah, I've had that.
I told her, I think she's doing okay. She's not a member of the church anymore, and she's at home right now with her husband. Or something very much to that effect. My ex-wife had remarried a couple of months after our divorce. That's a long and obvious story for another day.
Oh.
I was very nice and to the kind sister who had asked about my wife and let her know that we had been divorced for 2 years and I just like attending the ward and letting my kids go to church with their friends. I could tell that she was horrified and embarrassed and I felt terrible for her. She had never spoken to me before and sadly never spoke to me again. Mm-hmm. I felt awful that I had put her in that situation and somewhat annoyed that I had been divorced for 2 years, attending church by myself with my kids alone for 2 years before someone thought to ask what was up. But what do you do? I continued to attend that ward for a couple more years until I bought a home close to my kids and started attending my own ward. Being a divorced father and attending church with kids was a very interesting, quote, experience. Not one I recommend. I was single for 7 years before meeting my now lovely wife, in church, in my family ward, without a linger longer.
Nice.
A little nod to you there.
Uh-huh, thank you.
We've been happily married now for almost 14 years. In the long run, having a practice marriage paid off. Thanks to everyone who does such a great job putting the Cultural Hall together every week. I will look forward to every episode and articles of news. Brant, who is a lifer.
Nice.
Right on, Brant. Very
every
good.
Every episode of the Cultural Hall, Brant, lifer.
That's great. What a great story that he can relate to you, Brother Kyle.
I'd like hearing that I'm not the only one. Good for Brant. I like him.
So thank you. Again, he sent that email to richie@theculturalhall. We've got some other interesting emails, too. So why don't I just share these with you? Last week, I did a laundry list of people that we're hoping to get, or people that were already have gotten on the Cultural Hall and their episodes are just waiting to come, or people that we're hoping to get. And I got some interesting feedback from some people. Let me see here. This is interesting. This is Johnny says, I guess I'm what you might call a less active podcaster. I listen occasionally, but more often than not, I just tell myself that I'll listen next week. I wanted to let you guys know I really appreciated the sex episode. I think I might have read this. Let me go to another one. This one is from Emily, who says, I want to recommend a guest for the podcast.
Okay.
His name is Chance Clift, but goes by the name Chance Lewis. He is a Mormon rapper.
Like Mormon rap, do the Mormon rap.
Hopefully better than that. He's a Mormon rapper.
Just came to me, I'm sorry.
From Provo by way of Pennsylvania. Oh, and Emily feels the need to mention, and he's white.
Oh, and he's white. Okay, I was going to ask.
He's open for the Neon Trees. And Tyler Glenn, I guess, is a friend of him. That's the lead singer of the Neon Trees.
Okay.
In which he said he's absolutely and unabashedly in love with the city of Provo. Everything he talks about, every moves he makes is inspired directly by and for this weird little town. He goes to almost every band show, whether he's working it, doing sound for it, or attending because he wants to. He's been doing this long before I, Tyler, moved there 10 years ago, to be exact. So pretty interesting thing to get a white rapper. I think I might try and get our buddy Chance on.
I'd like
also
to hear some of his stuff.
And get him on. We also got in touch with Shannon Hale, if you guys know who that is. She's an author, and she wrote, along with Jerusha Hess, the movie Austinland, which was at Sundance.
Okay.
So we're working on getting those folks in. But there was another email in here where, give me 1 second while I click through here. I should have this prepared. Nope, that's not it. No, this guy. We have two young women who love each other that are going to come in the cultural hall with us.
Okay.
So that's coming up. But that's not the one I was looking for either.
Didn't judge that one, guys. What's
up? Nope.
Yeah, where are you now?
Thank you. Don't judge my fellow beings.
Unless they're wearing sweatpants. Yeah. Then
unless they wear sweatpants,
I hope they don't
to
show
my
up in
party
sweats.
And then I'm pissed.
Oh, crap. Where is it? Sorry. So unprofessional of me.
So, Brother Kyle.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
Okay.
Richie, I'm a convert, but will hopefully be a lifer, says this email. Heather in Sacktown.
Oh, Sacramento.
Says, I love the show and I think all you guys are awesome. Here's a short list of some people I would like to hear as guests on the Cultural Hall. Shay Butler from the Shaytards on YouTube. Have you guys ever seen those videos?
No.
Oh, my gosh. They're very, very popular. They do daily vlogs, video blogs.
Okay.
And they're hilarious. They're a Mormon family. But Shay is the husband, I believe. Anyway, the Shaytards. You can check that out. Google search Shaytards. Al Fox is an awesome convert with such a passionate testimony of the gospel. I don't know who, but she blogs and makes YouTube videos, apparently.
Okay.
Al Fox. Kirsten Danes, who wrote a great LDS infertility book. Kirsten's book has been a great source for help. Hillary Weeks, an LDS
singer.
Musician.
Yeah.
And also does a website, Billion Clicks.
Okay.
Anyway, so she goes on, thanks for all the time and effort that you do. Hopefully we'll hear these people in future episodes of the Cultural Hall. And encourage anyone to please, if you have suggestions, or more of the reason why I shared those is if you have connections with any of those people, happen to be related to them, they're in your ward, you know them. Hey, he was my roommate at BYU. I dated him. We were mission companions together.
We're still looking for a Manti Te'o connection, aren't
we? Yes, absolutely. you can go to theculturalhall.com and you can get in touch with us there. And that way we can hopefully have those people and others in the future on. Also, I contacted the woman who played, I think I told you guys this, but maybe not, the woman who played Mahana in the original Johnny Lingo.
Oh, yeah.
I contacted her before Christmas. She said, hey, get me in the new year, so I'm going to track her down.
Ooh, perfect.
Mahana. And I want to get the guy who plays the lead in The Phone Call. If you guys have ever seen that old church movie. I've referenced it here before in the Cultural Hall before. Awesome.
Okay.
So funny. He plays the bassoon. It's like a balloon with S's. So check that out. And again, any suggestions that you have, we'd love to have them. I think that'll do it. Let's go ahead and get into the second and the third episode or third blocks of this, the episode with Greg Godfrey of Nitro Circus fame. Check it out. Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast.
Hey, it's me, Richie T. Want to take a second and tell you about my buddy Dylan over at Lennon Design. Go to LennonDesign.com to see some of the stuff that he's done. Or, you know what, better yet, go to theculturalhall.com and look at all the graphic stuff that we have there at that website. You know who's done that? Dylan at Lennon Design. He's offering a special deal for people in the Cultural Hall, a 10% discount. You know why it's 10%, right? And all you have to do is just give him a call, 801-699-3022. Any sort of graphic artwork or website design that you might need, give him a call. Think about Lennon Design. You know, they sponsor your favorite podcast.
That's right. It is the second block here of the Cultural Hall, and it's me, Richie T.
And Lindsay.
And joining us here in the Cultural Hall is Mr. Greg Godfrey. Okay, so you hear that and you go, I'm not necessarily sure if I know who Greg Godfrey is, but maybe you do. Maybe you've heard of Nitro Circus before. Maybe you've heard of Godfrey Entertainment. Let me share a little bit about Godfrey Entertainment. Well, they've spent the last 14 years creating films, television shows, commercials, and other media.
Are you reading that off the website?
I am right okay, now, yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, right? I can watch, I'll keep reading.
He's like, I couldn't have said it better myself.
It's perfect.
Their initial focus, any idea, is on the action sport and motorsport industries. However, within the past several years, they've become involved with a broad range of production, including commercials and feature films. Welcome, Mr. Greg Godfrey. Thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
And you live here in Utah, right?
I do. I live in Draper.
Yeah, the 84020 yeah. For those that are local.
Pretty
used
good.
To be. I'm across the freeway from you over in Bluffdale.
Right. Well, that's where our office is. So we're right adjoining neighbors. So.
And you're also, tell me if I'm wrong, you're somehow affiliated with OGIO as well. Is that right?
Yeah, we got tied up with OGIO about 10 years ago and got him into this world. We were the ones that kind of led him into the action sports world.
So for people who don't know, OGIO is this awesome line. If you pay attention now, you'll notice it all the time, but like hockey bags and motorsports bags and backpacks and computer bags. And
yeah, mostly golf bags is actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's their biggest industry.
Well, you'll notice that I'm probably not much of a golfer then.
Neither am I.
But how did it come to be that you brought them into the world?
You know, OGIO was a real aggressive company. They'd done really well, and they had they wanted to be. I think they were kind of bored with golf, and they were doing also. In fact, it's a big part of their business. They'll do. I can't remember the name of it, but certain companies will hire them to build bags for them with their logo on it. Mm-hmm. There's a word for it, but I can't remember. But they were bored to death, and they just we were down the street from them, and they were into riding motorcycles and snowboarding and all that stuff, and so. We did a film together called Global Addiction in 2002. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the beginning of our relationship.
What's that film about?
It's just an adventure film, you know, kind of going all over the world, riding bikes and off-road trucks and different things like that just go really fast and have a lot of fun.
So how did you get into all this? You started the idea of being an entertainment guy when?
You know, I went to business school, and I took
Where'd
a
you go?
I went to the University of Utah.
Okay, so almost perfection, but not quite.
My wife went to BYU. I couldn't deal with it down there. I didn't like it very much.
So there you go.
So he married perfection. That's
yeah,
what
yeah.
Who do you root for in the rivalry game? That's
it's definitely
question.
Utah.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
So I went to the University of Utah, and I took a calculus class, and it just destroyed me. I said, this sucks. I can't live the rest of my life like this, and realized I was an arts person. I didn't understand at the time.
Mm-hmm. You don't look like an arts person. No offense or flattery intended. It's just if I were looking at you, I wouldn't be like, now there's an artsy guy.
He's artsy.
Yeah, it's just something that I found that where I gravitated to, and so I went to film school at the University of Utah, tried to get into USC, got accepted to UCLA's master program for writing, mm-hmm. didn't go, couldn't afford it, moved to LA, worked for Disney for a year, got thrown out of the studio because I sucked at production.
Aww.
on an office level, realized that my strength was in production and directing and producing, and so started my own company, and I took everything that I learned from them, and you kind of growing up with these Warren Miller films and Greg Stump films, the ski films, the snowboard films in Utah, you know, because the mountains are such a big part of our culture here. And that just motivated me to kind of go into the off-road market because that's what I love. I grew up racing motorcycles and trucks and bikes. And
here locally in Utah?
Yeah. And on a national level, I was professional for a while.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, for a bit. And then when I went on my mission, that pretty much destroyed that. So
yeah, not a lot of off-roading on the mission.
No.
You just didn't serve where I served. We would take that.
Where was that?
Cleveland.
Oh, yeah.
It's a much longer kind of random story as to why there would be elders off-roading in Cleveland.
Yeah, I'm curious of that one. You know, honest.
When you're 19 years old and you get a car that you don't have to pay for or worry about if it breaks, people start to do dumb things.
Yeah. My husband did that on his mission. In fact, I can remember stories him telling me now of taking the car.
Yeah. Driving through fields. That wasn't me. It was elders I knew. Right, not certainly not me.
Uh-huh. You know what? I was in Italy, and it was an off-road experience, too, just because there was no rules.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And I remember getting in multiple wrecks. In fact, I had to go clean up a wreck one time. I don't know how everybody wasn't dead. They got sideswiped in a van, and we had to pull the van out of there. It was pretty interesting. So,
so essentially just something that you love, but let's go back. You said you used to race professionally. Are we talking four-wheelers? Are we talking...
Motorcycles.
Motorcycles. Okay.
Yeah.
What's that like?
It was a wild world. It was, I love speed. I love aggression. I love excitement and thrills. And so I think motorcycles just fit me. And it gave me a good outlet to you know, because there's heavy consequences for being stupid or making mistakes. And so I think as a stubborn young kid, that really helped me, because when you go off the bike at 90 miles an hour and smack your head and can't remember your name and you're drooling, you kind of have a humbling experience. So, yeah, it kind of, it was good.
Did your folks get you into that as a young kid, or how did it even start?
You know, the reason that all came about is my dad was the one that pioneered, which is the Rocky Mountain Raceway. So in the state of Utah, he was the one that developed drag racing and oval racing, so NASCAR racing and motorcycle racing. He was the initial promoter doing that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I grew up, ever since I can remember, around really fast cars and nitro cars and in the drag world and stock cars and motorcycles. And I think because of the physical prowess of motorcycles, I was just more, and it was cheaper than racing a car. Mm-hmm. That's where I ended up.
Did your dad ever try and discourage you? Because he was probably around it and went, "Ooh, injuries, son, this is fine for me to promote." But
you know, he wasn't. My dad was always positive in that direction, and my mom, they supported me. I mean, at the age of 13 years old, I remember coming home with a broken arm and couldn't remember anything because I had a massive concussion, was knocked out for 5 minutes, and they just said, you know, you got to get back up. You got to keep going. My parents...
You're like, can I heal from the concussion first? And your mom and dad are like, no, get back on.
I thought it was a good way to grow up. And I have three kids of my own, and I've raised them, and my nephews and nieces. And the fact we have this live show that we go all across the world, and they perform in it. And
really?
So at the age of 15, my son's been in Australia and New Zealand performing in the show in front of 25, 30,000 people.
Wow.
He was down in Las Vegas that we filled the MGM Grand with about 25,000 people. And he and my daughter did the first triple backflip with Travis Pastrana.
Wow.
Who's kind of the iconic character of our world.
So your kid's way better than you ever were, isn't
it? Yeah.
They're supposed to be.
My nephews, too. My kids and my nephews, for sure.
Yeah, you want them to be better than you ever were, right?
And they start younger, and you start them before you probably started, and then...
Yeah, and trying to train them. My whole house is a training facility, just trying to get them so that they don't get hurt, and they're safe. And my wife was not privy to this world, and so she's... struggled with it. She does good, though.
Has it really been a struggle between the two of you guys?
Yeah.
What, just because she's afraid of him getting hurt? Or?
Yeah. I have a nephew that's paralyzed. Son was burned really severely from an accident, not really pertaining to this world, but just because of our lifestyle. And then he's got a broken collarbone right now. And my daughter's broke her leg 3 times.
Oh,
and
gosh.
Three surgeries.
So. Is there some point where you just go, okay, that was enough? You obviously still don't race professionally, but... There's at some point where you go. Ah.
You know, I just think it's you have to be passionate regardless of the consequences. I believe you wake up every morning and you got to be passionate about what you're doing, and that to me is the overriding principle. So if that's their passion, then I support them 100%. If it goes in another direction, I support them that way. I just want my kids and myself and the people that I'm surrounded with to wake up in the morning and be driven.
Does your wife travel with you a lot? Good.
The whole family goes.
I was going to say, because how is it? Is it hard to leave the family a lot and be away from home?
When the kids were little, that was kind of the case. And now it's fantastic because, we've been fortunate. We have, we've been all through New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And
gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah, gorgeous place. And
Lord of the Rings? Did you do the big long? No, I'm just kidding. Big long walk.
You see it. For sure. We were at Mount Cook and all that area down in the Southern Island, and you can see where old, what was his name, Jackson? Kevin Jackson, is that his name?
No, it's Oh, man, people are going to listen to this and be like, why doesn't he know? It'll come to me. Anyway, Peter Jackson.
Peter Jackson. But, yeah, you can see how he visualized that book. At least I do when you go through there and see the areas. And it does seem like another world. It's a bit of, I think Utah has the most drastic change in terrain that I've ever seen anywhere in the world, but New Zealand's good too.
You've seen all sorts of the world. Why did you choose to raise your family here in Utah?
I was born and raised in Utah. I love Utah. I'm definitely
Draper, born and raised in Draper.
No, I was in Cottonwood Heights. I went to Brighton High School. So yeah, it's I think once you grow up here, it's hard to leave. We were in California for 7 years, but came back.
So what's the most interesting thing you see about the church when you go to all these other places?
Well, you go to a place like New Zealand, and it's really strong. I have people coming up to me and missionaries all the time, and they trip out when they find out I'm Mormon. I don't, you know, they kind of go, what's the connection between Utah and you? And then they're kind of curious, and, you know, there's the typical questions about polygamy and this and that, and went from non-members, but then members are get really excited, like they can't believe I exist in this world.
You're from the motherland.
So it's fantastic. And in Australia, you know, we'll the kids, when they're with us, we go to all the temples. And
oh, cool.
Yeah, so they get to visit all that. And it's just they see the church growing in all the different areas. And I think in Europe, we'll do the same thing. And my nephews, one of them served in Argentina, one of them served in Czech Republic. So one of the stops is in Prague.
Oh,
so
cool.
So he's doing all the media.
Oh, nice.
Oh,
which is, you know, it helps. Kind of these... they speak all these different languages. My partner's from Sydney, Australia. And
what's your partner's name?
Michael Porum.
Okay.
And
LDS guy?
No.
Okay.
Far from it.
Okay. We're going to get into that a little bit too, because I'm curious.
So he just can't understand it, you know, this whole thing of how these kids speak all these different languages, and they're so clean cut, and they don't, you know, it's just, it's interesting.
And now they leave home when they're 18
instead
of
19.
Thank goodness. And they wait around for a year, right? Just waste the year of their life and get out of there.
So I'm sure that some of these missionaries or people that you meet kind of wonder, how do you, Greg Godfrey, become associated with Nitro Circus, which seems to be, I wouldn't say counter to each other, but I mean, that seems, I mean, I don't think of maybe, say, Travis Pastrana next to me in sacrament meeting being like, amen, but maybe, you know, maybe that's not giving him enough credit.
Oh, no, that's the truth. You would never see that.
But how did it come to be that with Godfrey Entertainment you did this Nitro Circus thing?
You know, it's just again, it goes back to passion, and I just I love this kind of stuff, and it was definitely, it's been a struggle to kind of find a balance. There's no doubt, because people that are attracted to this lifestyle are usually, you know, just running around with their hair on fire. And so a lot of guys in the tour like that, and a lot of guys I film with, and a lot of guys I work with. But I think that's like most cultures. So it's just, you just find a balance. And as I get older, I just don't really care what people think. And I live my life and live my standards. And trust me, I've been a bad example at times. And I've been a good example, because, you know, you just try and... I'm trying to do the best I can out there. So
you have all your buddies being like, come have a beer with us. And you're I'll get a Diet Coke. That sounds good.
You know, I think they all really respect it.
Yeah.
You know, Travis is honestly, he's the best one, because he'll sit there and if we're sitting in those circumstances, Travis will immediately establish that I'm Mormon.
Yeah, Mormon here.
Yeah.
Mormon. I can see that.
And people are like, what's a Mormon? Sometimes they're, what's a Mormon? And some people have an idea, and sometimes they're curious, and most of the time they're not. They're just like, okay, whatever. So Godfrey doesn't drink, but the reality is sometimes that pushes you out of things. But
yeah, I understand
Yeah, I don't care. I used to, but now it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
But how in actuality did it come about that Nitro Circus was formed and that you got involved with them? Like, what's the story there? I know it was your passion and you kind of surrounded it, but I want to know, here's Greg Godfrey from Utah, here's Travis Pastrana and the folk.
Yeah.
And how did that get united?
You know, it's strangely enough, I think it was because of my standards and everything else. You know, my biggest thing, and everybody knows this about me, not that I'm the best at it, but it's just family. And I think that when I was doing a commercial for a company, and Travis was an up-and-coming amateur star, and I was probably 25, and he was 14 at the time. So I was signed to go do this commercial on him, and I really hit it off with his parents. And then this kid, he kind of shared the mentality of me, where it's like I was much further down the path, but I could see where he was going in his racing, that he just couldn't shut off. And a lot of his sponsors and people around him had that problem. You know, they couldn't understand it. He just couldn't find moderation in his life. And I think that kind of gravitated us together. And Plus, you know, there's something magical. He's just one of those people that have that air about him that everyone's attracted to him. And
he's good looking.
Yeah. I don't know if he's good looking, but he's just, he is phenomenal at what he does. I mean, I think that ability to not shut it off. And I share, not as much now, but I share that with him. Like I'd always struggle. Like my people around me are like, you're going to kill yourself. What are you doing? And you know, what's wrong with you? And I just, you know, Travis shares that. And I think a lot of the people that gravitated to Nitro Circus share that. And it's not the commonality in our moral decisions. Is that the right word? But mm-hmm. It's the commonality in that that kind of drove this. But his parents really trusted me with him. And I remember his dad saying to me, when he turned 18, he's like, he's your problem now. And I'm like, oh, great.
Perfect.
Yeah, so he's a wild man. I've almost lost him when we've been shooting, I think, 3 times. You know, he should have been dead, and somehow he's survived. I guess it's not his time.
I've taken for granted that probably a lot of people know what Nitro Circus is, but maybe the whole world doesn't know what it is. Would you explain it for people?
Nitro Circus is, the best way I can describe it is it's more of a mentality of just this, you know, not being able to shut off at any given time of like just taking things as far as you possibly can. And that's not just stuff on motorcycles, but it's kind of stuff with cars and just this base jumping and this mentality of adventure and travel. All over the world, kind of through the, you know, just various events. We do these endurance races all over the world. And I mean, Nitro Circus, obviously it has to do with burning fuel mm-hmm. and motorsports. And so then it gravitates into this mentality of just pushing. And so you have these characters that I've put together. You know, there's this girl, Jolene Van Vute, that's in it. Tommy Passamani, that's mm-hmm. the blue-collar working man that weighs 300 pounds and doesn't belong on anything, but always gets great footage. I mean, he's a wild card. You don't ever know what's going to happen. And then there's Pastrana, that's the superhero and, you know, multiple national champion, world champion. The kid's amazing at different various disciplines in motorsports. And so... And then I'm just, because of film and producing and my racing background, and my only credit to all this is in racing is I was a Baja 1000 champion. I won the longest Ironman race in the world, and I set a world record in doing it in 40 hours, a 1,300-mile race.
So. Wow.
Yes.
Nonstop, but
jeez.
And that's just because I'm not talented, just stubborn. So that was the only thing.
It's the Nitro Circus, that's yeah. what it is.
So anyways, in a nutshell, that's kind of the mentality.
What's the, with Nitro Circus and with what you guys have done, what's the maybe two or three craziest things that you've ever done?
I would say the most interesting is every time we go and do these building-to-building jumps where there's just, you know, Travis did one in the MTV series. We had a show on MTV for 2 years. And he jumped in downtown LA it was a 75-foot gap. And he backflipped over the gap, and jeez. You know, that was a little sketchy. And then one time we were jumping into the Grand Canyon, and he about drove himself into the bottom of that, pulled too late, mm. and somehow at the very last minute pulled and landed 150 feet up on a cliff. And we had to do a military ops rescue mission. It felt like I was a Green Beret pulling him off the side of this ledge. And then we were in Panama, and he did a building-to-building, and so did Eric Rohner, and so did Special Greg. And again, those things, it's just pass or fail. They're always the scariest.
You live or you die. Yeah. Pass or fail.
Are we going to do this? Yeah. Or are going to die?
Is there a lot of preparation that goes into those, or is it?
Yes and no. I mean, that's the problem. We're also ADD that it, like, we don't spend a lot of time prepping for it.
You're just like, let's go for it. Let's do it.
And we don't think about the consequences, I think. You know, you just think about the success. And as I've gotten older, I try and get better about it, but... I just broke my pelvis in Australia because of a lack of judgment, I'll say.
Mm.
My son whipped around at this live show in Brisbane. He whipped around this loop on a big wheel. As stupid as that sounds, you know, like a kid's toy.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, come on, Dad, we'll do it together and you can do it in the show. And I went and flew out of the top out of it about 15 feet up and landed on the concrete, and it broke my pelvis, my T3 and my shoulder blade. I'm laying in the emergency room. My wife walks in. She goes, you're an idiot. And walks out.
I was going to say, and that's when your wife walks in and she's like, we're done. We're done with this.
So, well, coming back in the third block, I want to talk a little bit more about what it's like as far as your faith when you're out doing these things, and then a little bit more about your home life and what that's like. That'll be coming back here in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Sidewinder Media was named as one of Utah's top photographers by In This Week magazine and is a winner of several awards for fine art, portrait, and event photography. Sidewinder Media has been professionally photographing everything from wildlife to headshots for over 10 years. Sidewinder Media has the experience and the knowledge to capture your special occasion or portrait the way you want it. They also film and edit music or product videos and do simple ads for Facebook or websites. Email them at sidewindermedia@gmail.com or call Rusty at 801-941-5500. To book your shoot today.
It's the third block of the Cultural Hall, and joining us again, well, still, I guess he has never left, but we left you to, for those commercial. Forget it. It's Greg Godfrey, and it's Lindsay and I, Richie T. And, okay, so Nitro Circus, you're crazy. Insanity, wife, pelvis, broken. How did you meet your wife?
Yeah, okay. It's been so long, I can't remember.
Which story do I want to tell?
How many concussions ago was it?
Yeah. You know, I didn't grow up LDS, and I was a pretty wild kid. And, I kind of had some experiences when I was about 17, and I had a young men's leader come in and really kind of befriend me, and I just hated the Mormon church. I didn't like anything about it. I didn't like the people in it. I think I just had some negative experiences, for
like
sure.
Like kids that were like, I can't play with you because you're not Mormon, that kind of thing?
No, it wasn't that so much. It was more with girls.
Oh, okay.
The mom's freaking out because I wasn't LDS.
Oh, he's bad. Yeah. You don't know what he's going to try and do, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, okay. I remember just a couple incidents. But, you know, I got past it. And then, but this one guy really befriended me. And then the bishop at the time asked me to go and be a part of... I just lost the word. What do you call it?
Youth trek. Conference?
Oh, no, trek. He kept, and this is when they used to do the treks that were really gnarly, like that you would starve for, you know, 10 hours, and then they would push until the middle of the night. And he's like, you need to go, because I was wrestled all through high school and, you know, was used to kind of suffering. And he says, you need to go there for these other kids. So he really lured me in with this thing. And I met her on that.
On trek.
Yeah.
Cute.
So I kind of decided to go on a mission at that time too. So
butch it up a little bit. It's not cute. Yeah. That's manly. So that's tough. That's,
it's like meant to be that he befriended the leader, and then the bishop asked him to go, and then he met his wife.
Yeah,
that's how it's it cute. Works.
Is it cute? Is that what that is? But that, I mean, that's an interesting point, and that's a whole different subject about how the treks now are so wussified for the kids.
I feel like they are. Yeah.
They are a little bit.
I think you should plan one next time, and then it'll be crazy.
I would brutalize the kids.
But it's probably, what, like a four-day thing? And how, give me the exact instance. Like, you were, she was in your family?
You know what happened? What happened was her mom was in my family.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And her mom really kind of liked, she just said, you need to meet my daughter. You need to meet my daughter. And her daughter was another family, and so then she brought her daughter over, and I knew who she was kind of because we actually went to the same high school, but I just never had known her. I thought she was way out of my league, and so yeah, that's how it happened.
So you stayed together throughout college and or the mission?
No, I just met her there. Hmm. Actually, I had another girlfriend that got me on a mission.
That's manly.
Yeah, see, that ain't cute. That's tough.
Not cute at all.
She's the one that got me on the mission. This other girl that I was actually dating at the time, and then which was good, and then she was there when I got home from my mission, but it wasn't going to work out. And then my wife was actually dating a friend of mine. Oh. So that was taboo. It was, you know, it's never an easy deal. And then we just kept falling deeper and deeper for each other, and that was it.
So I guess I'm kind of confused. So you went on the trek as a non-member?
Well, I was baptized as a kid.
Oh, baptized as a kid, but you'd never really gone or anything. Like, okay, that's what I was trying to connect. I was like, so where did it come about?
Yeah.
So then on trek, you kind of made the decision, hey, mission's for me.
Yeah, I was sick of the life I was leading. I'd seen the life I wanted, and especially I'd seen the things that sucked in my life growing up, and because the priesthood wasn't in our house and different things, and I just didn't want it for my kids or my family. And it was weird at a young age that I had enough perception to understand that, because I don't think that far in advance. So I don't know. It just worked out.
So did your family, was your family converts, or had they been members and just kind of been inactive?
Yeah, my mom and dad were married in the temple by Harold B. Lee, believe it or not. I mean, anybody knows my family would just trip out by hearing that. But they I think my dad just became obsessed with work. They're great people, but, you know, just other things took over. And, because they made that decision, my sister, my brother, and I always felt like there were certain things we lacked in our lives. And didn't want our kids to miss out on. So,
are your siblings active?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. So then you meet or you go on the mission to Italy. What's that like? Italy. Not easy, right? Yeah. It's not like your South America missions.
But it was perfect for me because it was just, you know, it was grueling and kind of made me really deal with a lot of things, you know. So,
like what?
I think that I had a lot of companions that were really homesick and didn't want to work. And for me, you know, it was not that I was there to get a job done, because for me it was a very conscious decision to be out there. Mm-hmm. And so when I had companions that didn't want to do anything, it was really, you know, I didn't take it. So I would really push people. That was definitely the biggest struggle. And then I was never good at school, so learning a language I just thought was going to be impossible. But you kind of had to, you know, have a lot of faith in it, and it came. And yeah, it was one of the biggest adventures of my life. Just and being down at Sicily, I mean, we were on our own. Mm-hmm. There was no general authorities that visited. There was no, I mean, we were on our own.
Is it part of the Rome mission? Or
at the
what
time,
is
it was Catania. Now it's part of Rome.
Okay.
They've split it up. So
how about that with getting a temple over in Italy?
I think it's pretty neat. You know, the members that are there are super strong, and so I can understand that. You know, they're very aggressive, and they believe in it, and they're sick of the traditions in that country, and they want to change it. And I think they're sick of the apathy of the people there. The members are. Mm-hmm. So they're really pushing, and I totally understand. I think it's great. I want to go over for the dedication, but
I think we'll should yeah. race around it.
Yeah.
We're going to jump over the temple. And then
before they put Moroni, otherwise it's a little too tall.
Yeah.
It was funny because I got asked to do a conference, like a youth thing. And it was almost a scout, but it was a youth thing. It was like 4,000 kids in Northern California. And they asked me they go, what do you want to speak on? I said, I don't know. And they wanted me to talk about that, my conversion. And then they go, well, how do you want to introduce yourself? And I said, well, typically I'll kind of like ride a bike around and burn out on the stage or whatever. And he goes, do it. So they went and got a bike, and I like wheelied through the crowd, and I hit five kids. And
came
up on the stage and you know, was burning out on the stage, and L. Tom Perry spoke after me. So. But they just said, you know, the youth got to be, it's a different way to speak to them. And yeah. I think it's, you know, some kids connect to that. So
yeah, but there wasn't a single kid that was like, boring, yeah. Try something new, you know, after that. Jeez.
Yeah.
So, would you be willing to share an experience from your mission that you had? Either teaching someone or, you know, when you first got there, just some sort of experience.
You know, I think that for me, a conversion was a really strong, for me, it had to be really, really strong. I think the spiritual experiences that I had, because I was just on my own. I didn't have family backing me up. I mean, my sister was really strong, and so it was good to have her, but my dad was really upset that I went on a mission because he wanted
that you were wasting your time.
Yeah.
Or? Okay.
Yeah. He wanted me to go to work or go to school. And, so I, you know, I remember just feeling like, you know, as I was getting ready to teach, and I kept having to testify at Joseph Smith, and it was like, you know, I didn't understand it. And I
didn't understand how it happened. Or?
Yeah. I just couldn't, it was hard for me to grasp the whole scenario. Like I was just understanding the atonement and all that stuff. And so I remember just firmly believing, you know, those promises. And so I remember just getting on my knees and, I mean, literally burying my soul, everything I had, because for me, there was no reason to be there if it wasn't true. Mm-hmm. I wasn't going to waste my time or anybody else's time. And, so I remember just getting these strong confirmations that, Joseph Smith truly was a prophet of God, and the Book of Mormon was true. And so they were so powerful that I think I've continually gotten more and more revelation that those things are true. Mm-hmm. And I think those were some of the most powerful experiences, because you're testifying to this, you know, people aren't going to believe you unless
they
really have
that
conversion. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at those times, there were some challenging times. I think back, and it was definitely a concrete moment in my life of establishing who and what I was going to be as a person. So,
have there ever been times that you've had an opportunity to share the gospel through the Nitro Circus stuff?
Yeah, I think a lot of the athletes, you know, you'll it's pretty quick. You see the ones that you spend so much time, and you're so intimate with these guys, and mm-hmm. especially when. I think the thing that's interesting, what I like, is you break down barriers quick, and people are going to die. You know, there's multiple times that I've had to deal with guys that are almost, you know, that whether they've been knocked unconscious and they feel like there's so much trauma to the brain that they might be dead.
Mm-hmm. You're like, you need religion yeah. in your life. Let me tell you why.
hold on real quick before yeah. you jump.
Before you jump.
So I think, you know, you get into good conversations with people. And I can't even tell you how many times I've just sat there and I've dealt with the athletes or my kids or my nephews, and they've been, or myself. You know, I had a really bad accident 3 years ago where I crashed and my wife thought I was dead. I hit so hard I was out for about 10 minutes and she didn't know if I was breathing or if I had my vitals or, it's just,
when you're what were you doing?
I was racing motorcycles, but, I've those experiences and I've had opportunities to give blessings to different people. And I think they've saved people's lives, and it's not me. It's just, and then they come back and sometimes they want to talk about it and sometimes they don't. You know, and you just try and be open and you try and be ready. And I try not to push. I try and, you know, it's the same thing all of us do and try and be good examples, which I'm not all the time. I know I'm a jerk at sometimes, but
it's okay. Yeah. We forgive you. Yeah.
No, I know I am because I kind of feel bad about it because constantly being watched.
Yeah.
Sure. As being an example of the entire faith. And although you don't want to be that way, people will still go, Greg, Mormon, Mormons are Greg.
Yeah.
This is how it goes.
Yeah.
Being one of the only members, you're the only thing they know of the church.
Yeah, that's not good all the time.
So good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks for that.
Okay. More pressure. How does your wife deal with it? You mentioned she's really good about it.
My wife and I have a tremendous relationship, and because I've been injured so much, I've struggled with pain pills and stuff like that. And so that's the thing that scares her more than anything, is because you have a dependency when your body's hurting all the time. You know, you start to have a dependency on those things. And I think she doesn't want to see me paralyzed or brain dead or whatever, but I think that's the thing that scares her more than anything is just a dependency on pills or whatever. And so, you know, she's fantastic. The fact that she is patient, she puts down her foot when she has to, she's strong. And that's a hard thing in my family. So, we have our struggles, but I have a great relationship with her.
Is there a point that you'll be done with it all?
I think I'm done with the silly little antics, but I think I'll ride motorcycles in these endurance race type things for as long as I can. And we race trucks now and cars, and so I think we'll do that for a long time. I can't ever get the speed and the adrenaline and the excitement out of me. I just don't. I'm 43 years old and I still am. It's hard to get rid of it.
Now you pass it on to your kids.
Yeah, you put a roll cage around you. Yeah. With age comes a cage.
There you go.
So let's ask you this. Do you have a calling in your ward? You mentioned that you do youth conferences and stuff like that. How would people be able to get in touch with you to do that if they wanted?
I don't know. My calling, I'm just a missionary, a stake missionary. I don't know. They could hit me up, greg@godforentertainment.com, if they wanted to do something like that. I think a lot of times it just comes through friends of a friend, you know, that they talk to us. And then, again, you know, the same conversation we're having, they're like, man, you need to speak to our youth. So,
If you could pick a calling of all the church, you can make one up or one that already exists. If you could pick a calling, what would you pick?
You know, I'm kind of happy of where I stand in it. You know, doing these speaking engagements and even doing mission. I feel like I'm a missionary. I always felt like that's my calling. Everywhere I go, I'm always a missionary. I like missionary work. I like talking to people about it. I like getting into people's lives. So I think I'm happy with. I think, yeah, my calling's not like I'm not a full-time missionary, but I feel like that's my wife and I. That's what we do. So
it'd be hard for you to be like a Sunday school teacher because you wouldn't be there every week.
He'd roll his eyes for people who couldn't see that.
I did that for multiple years. They had me teach, you know, I think it was 15, 16-year-olds, and that was tough because I was constantly out of town. Yeah. And then I taught Elders Quorum forever, and then I've always, it seems like, done that. And I just do whatever I'm asked. I'll take out the garbage if I have to, so whatever.
Official garbage man of the church.
Yeah.
Church garbage man.
You know, it's very possible that there's someone in the same situation that you were in, someone that's, 18 or now even 17, about ready to be at that age to serve a mission. What would you say to that person that might be like you were 20 plus years ago? Man, does that sound old? Because it's been 13 years since my mission, right?
It goes quick. Yeah. Trust me. How old are you?
I'm 32.
Yeah, young. I got 10 years on you. In fact, it's Travis Pastrana's birthday today, so everybody that wants to wish him happy birthday, go for it.
There
happy
you go.
Happy birthday, man.
But, and he's 30, so he's and he walks like he's a 60-year-old man. He can barely move. But, you know, I think for kids as they're coming up, you got to make your own decisions, and I would hope that, you know, they're strong enough to just go for it and make their minds up. I am so sick and tired of dealing with youth that are just stuck. And I get really brash with them because it's like, you know, this is a decision that's going to affect the rest of your life. And I think I was fortunate about the way I grew up is I saw the negative effects. I think kids that grow up with it handed to them and the church is so easy and they're living off their parents' testimony, it's frustrating. And they go out in the mission field, and I had companions like that, and they don't want to be there. Mm-hmm. They're not committed to it. And there's just so many good things that they can do. So I would say, you know, dig, figure it out, and commit yourself. I think in General Conference that was laid out pretty clear, wasn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What, Jeffrey R. Holland?
Yeah, man. Yeah. I love that internet meme that says, I don't know if you've seen this on Facebook or anywhere out there, that says, it has a picture of Jeffrey R. Holland, and it says, I don't always give the best talks at General Conference. And then below it, it says, oh, wait, yes, I do. I thought that was pretty classic.
I just love how bold he is.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
he's aggressive when he comes at the mic, even. You know, because everybody's so monotone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he's just, I mean, that old jowl he's got is just shaking, and he's going for it.
You never walk away going, I wonder what he meant by
it. Yeah, exactly.
You know, exactly.
It's very clear.
Last question before we let you go. Is what is your favorite part of your faith?
Oh, you know, this is a strange thing. I find that there's a tremendous, I live for adventure. I find that in the Mormon faith, there is a tremendous amount of adventure. Because when you have the courage to dive into people's lives and really get intimate with them and try and help them get through, to overcome, I think I was put on this earth to help people overcome. I think that's my calling more than anything. Mm-hmm. And so I have this, as I'm around the world, all of a sudden, maybe through a translator or through English or through languages that I know, you can communicate to people on a level that you intimately get to know them and understand, and no matter what the background, and it's such an adventure to me. All of a sudden, you're sitting in a jungle in Bermuda, you know, or you're on the other side of the world in Thailand, and you're communicating to these people that are having the same struggles we're having. And it's just like, you know, I think it's kind of fascinating that we're all kind of the same in that direction. But I love kind of traipsing around the world, and you know, I've been in with the gospel. I think you really change people's lives, and so to me, there's no greater thing in this world than that. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter how much, you know, whatever other experiences might drive you. But to me, that is the greatest thing about it. Mm-hmm. And our church is a worldwide organization, and it is so powerful.
It's the same wherever you go. Sacrament meeting in New Zealand is the same as sacrament meeting in Utah.
It is. And people are, and it's interesting when you go to church and you grow up in Utah, and it's so common to us, and you go over there and they're just trying to figure out the, maybe not New Zealand, it's pretty culturized, but maybe some of the Asia countries or even in Italy. Mm-hmm. They're like trying to understand it, but they're trying so hard, and they're, and things that even being a non-member growing up that I took for, that I even knew about Mormonism, that they don't know. And so it's like, it's just always an adventure. And the situations you get thrown into are nuts, especially as a missionary. You know, you'll find yourself in the darkest. I remember being in Palermo, which was probably one of the most dangerous cities in all of Europe.
Dangerous because of crime or?
Yeah, the mob, that's where it's from. You know, it's where it started. And when I was there, they were having there was a judge that was standing up against the mob and trying to put away a couple of the capos, the heads of the family. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of murders in the street. I came across the guy right after a gunfight. You know, it was a full-on shoot out, and the one guy, his head was blown off.
Oh, geez.
It sounds kind of gross. I'm sorry.
No.
But
it's fascinating.
But then the judges were whisked around. Like, they would come out, they had armed guards in front of their apartments, and it was a maximum security prison where they were doing the trials, and they couldn't get to this one judge because he was just determined. He goes, I don't care if my life's on the line. I'm going to stop this evilness. Is that a word even?
Yeah.
But he wanted to stop this. And I remember he was not of our faith, but I was just thinking, wow, that is some courage. That is a courageous, bold man. He was sick of it. And one day we were sitting in the city and just heard this massive explosion. And the freeway went out around kind of this mountain close to the ocean, and it was one only ways in and out of Palermo, mm-hmm. and the mob couldn't get him, so he was going to a different side of the island, and they just blew up the freeway.
Jeez.
Killed 38 people, including the guy, so they stopped the trials because the mob had taken out every one of the judges. So it was war zone.
So serve a mission.
Yay.
and I saw so many people hooked on heroin at that point. You know, it hadn't become a big drug in the United States like it is now. Mm-hmm. And you're helping people get off that. I mean, I saw a 13-year-old kid inject himself with a needle, and I'm just watching him fade away as the drug took hold of him. And I'm like, oh.
Does it make you appreciate your Utah bubble?
Oh, yeah.
Because I love my Utah bubble.
Let me ask you this, Greg, and then let's get you out of here. We ask people to climb up on the Ramayumptum.
So
Well, in the Book of Mormon, it's where everyone would be like, I'm so great, and they'd get up there and pray for everyone else to hear. But here in the Cultural Hall, it's where people can find you. You already mentioned your email, which is greg@godfreyentertainment.
Mm-hmm.
If there's a Facebook page people can go like, if
there's a Facebook page, yeah. And it's just Greg Godfrey, I believe.
So people can go there.
That's Twitter. Instagram.
At Greg Godfrey.
Yeah.
Instagram. Cool. All right. So look him up and get him to come to your youth conference, or just tell him he's a nice guy for being here in the Cultural Hall with us. We hope that this podcast has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you were not well enough to join us this week, that you'll be able to join and listen next week. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back row. We really got to go on the Cultural Hall show.